and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, I'm good. How are you? Oh, you didn't ask.
I didn't ask, but it's good to know you're all right.
How are you?
Yeah, very well. Were you listening to me? Literally the first sentence you've switched off.
Yeah, I've gone wrong already. That must be a record for us.
Have I bored you that quickly? Oh, God, he's off again.
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go. What shit is he going to come out with this week?
Well, what shit are we coming out with this week?
Well, I thought the first shit we talk about, because I know you've probably been following it, is the snooker.
Actually, this year I haven't been following the snooker as closely as I normally would.
Because normally, you know, that's like your World Cup. That's
like, I know.
It's like the dull World Cup.
Oi, less of dull.
Well, it's not dull this year. It's been kicking off. I've been reading bits about it this week, and it made me tune in for little bits and pieces. In fact, I've just left to come and record this. I was watching a bit of the final, waiting for it to kick off. But wasn't there something in the week where, like, a referee had to get in between a couple of players? They would have a fight.
Really?
Yeah, there was like some weird thing where the guy got very upset and the ref had to sort of get in between them a bit, apparently.
Oh, God, I don't watch it.
Oh, mate, it's all kicking off. It's like it's suddenly been overcome with thugs.
Thugs with big sticks.
I mean, when I say he had to get in between them, the little bit I saw of it was, it wasn't as if they were sort of, it didn't look like there was going to be much of a fight, but it was, one of the players wasn't very happy with the other player because he was using dirty tactics, like standing in the eye line of the player.
Okay.
And things like that, standing up, chalking right. His cue. I've got a mate who does that when you play him at pool. It doesn't bother me because I don't know how to play pool, but those people that take it really seriously, they get really pissed off with him because he'll stand there chalking his cue in their eye line.
That is very irritating.
I mean, in pool, in a pub, it doesn't matter, although people take it very seriously.
Well, I take it quite seriously. I haven't played pool in years now.
They used to play it in the pub that I used to go in before lockdown, before pubs sort of became the new thing, where I wouldn't have thought pool tables can be played on right now.
I don't know. But the thing is, what he's doing is quite a psychologically arrogant thing to do, because you only need to chalk your cue if you're about to take a shot. So
yeah.
By him chalking his cue, getting ready, it's like saying, I'm preparing for you to miss this shot, yeah. And then it's my go.
Yeah, well, people just get very upset with him, and I used to sit in the corner, because I rarely played, because when I first used to go to the pub where there was a pool table, I used to play a little bit, because I thought I was just a bit of fun. And then you realise that people treat pub pool like the snooker players treat the World Championship.
Yes.
You think you're playing for a pound in a pokey little pub, and you take in this, like, rows would break out over the different rules. Well, you didn't say we were playing that rule. It's like, it's a pub, mate. Just calm down.
No, I'm a big believer in that.
Grabs.
You need to establish the rules before you start. You can't do it midway through.
Wow, it's unbelievable. I never understood it. So I stopped playing.
Is that why you're rubbish?
Well, yeah, and partly because I'm rubbish. So people didn't like to play me anyway because I wouldn't play properly in their eyes. You know, I just thought, oh, hang on, I'm on a night out. I thought I was having a bit of fun. I didn't realise that this wasn't a fun part of the pub. I thought this was going to be part of the evening's entertainment. Me and my mates having a bit of a laugh around the pool table. Fuck me, or was I wrong?
It can be quite challenging playing a shit player because they do things you're not expecting, and it changes your game plan altogether, constantly. Every single shot, everything you've planned goes out the window because they change the table every time.
Well, that's what one guy said to me when I played him once. He said, "I hate playing you because you have no strategy." You know, I don't think about where the cue ball is going to end up for the next shot. I just hit and hope, and whatever happens, happens. I thought that's what the game was about, but oh no, you've got to faff about worrying about where the white's going to go. Where's the fun in that?
Wow. Well, I never knew the snooker was going to start getting argy-bargy.
And then Mark Selby, who's one of the top players, who lost to Ronnie O'Sullivan, who we'll get to in a minute.
Oh yeah, I've seen him in the news.
Well, he was playing Mark Selby in the semi-final, and Ronnie O'Sullivan won, so he's playing in the final right now as we speak. And Mark Selby, in his post-match interview, said that he thought Ronnie O'Sullivan had disrespected him because when he'd put Ronnie O'Sullivan into a snooker, Ronnie O'Sullivan just smashed the balls, basically doing what I would do, hit and hope, rather than playing with any strategy at all. And Mark Selby was very upset because he thought that was disrespectful.
It's not really against any rules.
It's against the spirit of the game.
I don't think it is particularly. You're perfectly entitled to do that, but maybe it's rubbed Mark Selby up the wrong way.
Well, he obviously did. I mean, Ronnie O'Sullivan said, if I was as good at getting out of snookers as Mark Selby, then maybe I'd play differently. But the thing about Ronnie O'Sullivan is, I'm not a fan. He's just annoying. It's like, if you hate snooker that much, don't play it, mate. Just fuck off.
He is extremely talented, though. There's no denying that.
He's a good player. There's no denying that. But I can't stand his sort of whining all the time. And I saw an interview with him the other day when he was whining about the quality of players coming up.
Yeah, this was brilliant. Someone asked him, because he's been in the game for such a long time, they said, if we'd asked you 20, 25 years ago if you would still be this good all this time later, he said, well, then I'd have probably said, yeah, that's surprising. But now, having seen how rubbish everyone else is, and then he went on to say, I'd have to lose an arm and a leg to fall out of the top 50.
Wow.
It's just dripping with arrogance.
I don't like him. I want him to lose the final. Currently he's winning, but I hope he loses.
I think it's fine talking smack so long as you can back it up. And he can.
Well, he can, but I don't like all that. I don't. That's why I don't like boxing. I don't like all that trash talk, all that bollocks. It's just come out. If you've lost, just come out and say, well, I was beaten by the better player, or fair enough, I wasn't up to my game today. But don't start doing all this, like he normally does. Well, I don't like snooker anyway. Well, don't turn up then. I saw this interview with him the other day where he was moaning. He was sort of saying, well, I don't come here to win anymore. I just come here for fun. I don't really care. That's fine. And he's going, but it's quite nice not having the crowd here because it means I can get in and out quickly. I don't have to stop for fans. It's like, well, don't start saying that. They're the ones that have kept you going all these years.
That is a bit of a slap in the face. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Horrible.
But I think snooker's been on the decline for this ever since they stopped allowing them to have alcohol. Those used to have a beer with them in the old days, didn't they?
Well, so now
they're stuck with nothing to do and just aggression. Just have a pint, chill out.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing that I thought about it watching the snooker the other day is, you see, like with the darts, they stop the players drinking on the stage. So they now just have their water. But the crowd are all getting pissed up, so there's a great atmosphere. Snooker is just, there's no drinking allowed on the stage or around the table, whatever you want to call it. But also the crowd have to be quiet all the time. And I just think it's about time snooker, there's something needs to change in snooker. And the other thing I thought is, why are they still wearing fucking waistcoats and bow ties? If I see someone in a bow tie, my automatic response is wanker. Let's get rid of all of that. Take the fucking bow ties off and the waistcoats. Ridiculous.
What, you want it to look more casual?
Yeah, casual. It doesn't matter. People are playing it in a pub in jeans halfway down their arse. So, do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter.
You couldn't play in a big baggy t-shirt that's slopping all over the table, knocking the balls around. Well,
obviously you'd wear something appropriate, but why does it have to be a waistcoat and bow tie? Just get rid of the bow tie then. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's a good compromise. I agree. Lose the bow tie.
Why is that still a thing?
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? When they're trying to get young people into snooker, people go out and buy the football shirt of their favourite team. I'll go and buy I want a Ronnie O'Sullivan bow tie. It's not happening, is it?
No, that's true. I wonder if they have to wear it. Could they go casual, or would that... is there a dress code for being a professional snooker player?
I don't know.
Because they all do it.
They do all do it. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's time that they just cashed it up a bit. I mean, I know they try and funk it up with sort of walk-on music, but it doesn't really work. It's not really, not like the darts. The darts has got... They got the razzmatazz right in darts.
Yeah.
But snooker, they haven't quite got that right yet.
They're trying, though, bless them.
Yeah. I mean, this year it's obviously hard. I think for the final, they've actually got a bit of a crowd in.
Right, have they?
Yeah. That's the first time they've allowed people in.
Oh.
So the socially distanced is about... I've been watching a bit of it today, so there's some people there, so there's a little bit of atmosphere, if you can call it that. So obviously Paul's your thing, right? But I was thinking, if you were to become like in the rankings of the greatest snooker players, what would you wear? How would you change it up? If there was no dress code, what would you do?
I don't know. I think I'd probably be very casual. I think jeans and a t-shirt would be the
jeans
boring
and a
answer.
T-shirt. Yeah. And would you, not like in the darts, you wouldn't have like a special shirt made with your nickname.
Oh,
like
one of those ridiculous big jazzy Hawaiian shirts.
Because
darts players wear.
They've got nicknames now in the snooker as well, haven't they?
Oh, they've had them for a year. Well, decades they've had nicknames, yeah.
Because obviously, it was the Hurricane. Who was he? That was Jimmy White, wasn't it? Was he the Hurricane?
Hurricane Higgins, wasn't it?
Oh, Hurricane Higgins.
Yeah.
Whirlwind was Jimmy White, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was the Whirlwind.
I think he has a few other nicknames. non-snooker related.
What are the other... what's Ronnie O'Sullivan's nickname? I've got a few for him, but what's his nickname?
Ronnie the Rocket.
Oh, the Rocket. Of course, it's the Rocket.
Yep.
Oh, God. So, I mean, why doesn't he just have, like, a little Hawaiian shirt made with a rocket on it? What's his walk-on music?
I honestly don't know.
You don't know what he's walk-on
I don't know
music.
If they alternate it or not.
Oh, maybe they change it up a little bit.
Because I haven't really watched any snooker this year, but I am going to get down and put the final on, especially if you're telling me it's all kicking off.
Oh, yeah. And you never know how, with Ronnie, with the rocket, you never know, do you? You never know whether he's going to kick off or not. I've told you before about the bowls and how they jazz that up.
Don't they get Barry off EastEnders to sing Rock's Mustang Sally?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, love it.
Every year at the final, they bring him on. Why aren't they getting him on in the snooker?
Didn't you tell me that they parked him, if they were using someone else?
I didn't see it this year, so I can't tell you.
I was worried he'd been ditched.
Oh, I don't think they ditch. I think he's a bit of a favourite amongst the over 80s who go to that event.
I hope they haven't got rid of him, because let's be honest, I don't think he's got much else on.
Now, as we record right now, it's Sunday, August the 16th, Ben.
Yes, it is.
The 43rd anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley.
Wow.
He died 1 month and 3 days before I was born, which makes me often wonder whether I am some sort of reincarnation of Elvis.
Right. What are the resemblances, sorry?
No major resemblances, except that the timeline just seems a bit too weird for it not to be the case. Do you know what
you
I mean?
Think?
Yeah.
You think Elvis died and his sort of spirit hung around for a month and 3 days waiting for you.
Waiting for me, yeah.
For no particular reason. Yeah, sounds very plausible.
Yeah. Of course, many people would think that Elvis is still alive.
Yeah, I don't know why. How old would he be?
He would be...
How old was he when he died? Was he 42 when he died?
I'm not entirely
He'd be
sure.
around 85, wouldn't he?
I think I'm just looking it up. Hang on. He was born in 1935. So, yes, he would be 85 today, wouldn't he? No,
yes.
on his birthday. Sorry, this is his death day. On his birthday this year, he would have been 85.
Yes.
So, yeah, you could, it's quite possible he's still alive somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very recognisable figure, though. It would be hard to vanish.
Well, let me tell you, a man has claimed that he met Elvis Presley after his death in Chile.
Any proof?
A photograph is one a bit of the proof. Obviously, I can't show you that right now in a podcast. I will tweet the photograph.
Okay.
it's just an old man and a photocopier. It looks nothing like what Elvis Presley would have looked like. I'm absolutely convinced. This is supposedly taken about 1994. Elvis would have been about, what had he been then? 60. About 60.
Right.
And he looks nothing like Elvis.
So it's just a liar with a photograph of him with someone else.
Well, hang on a minute, because he says that this man is living under the name Bill now. And he's just living a quiet life in Chile. Apparently, he lived in a place called Antofagasta, which is in northern Chile.
Okay.
And he's just living a very quiet life. And there's also some audio proof.
Ooh, now that is good for the podcast.
Yes, right. So, this same man who says he's met Bill, right? He says that he spoke to him on the phone and left this quick message. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Wait. This is Elvis.
Why are you looking me up? what is it that you...
Okay.
There we go. That's Elvis, quite clearly.
Yeah. Or it's someone doing a bad Elvis impression who's only saying one thing.
No, have a listen, right?
Why are you looking me up? what is it that you...
I mean, he seems to not be able to really string a sentence together.
No.
I think he was just on laughing gas the whole time. Well, what's going on there?
Yeah, that's probably not the same person who, you know, put together the Wonder Review.
So are you doubting that this Bill is Elvis?
Call me a pessimist, but yes, I am.
Oh, that's a real shame. I mean, I don't know why, if he did fake his own death, he wouldn't have come forward by now. I reckon he would have done.
Why, though?
Well, because there's so many conspiracy theories. If you're 85, wouldn't you just come out now and say,
I faked it all. I faked my own death.
That's my Elvis impression. That's one of the reasons why I feel I'm reincarnated, because I could do the
God,
voice.
I wonder what was happening to you for a second
I could do the voice so brilliantly. wouldn't you think now's the time to come out and do that?
Yeah, would you ever reveal it, though?
I don't know. Well, I suppose if you faked it, you can't really. I mean, there's all these people that they reckon faked their deaths, isn't there? There's Tupac Shakur, of course. Pictures of him are often turning up.
But hang on a minute. Wasn't Tupac Shakur shot on the Las Vegas Strip in front of hundreds of witnesses?
Well, there's lots of people that don't believe all that. They think he faked it. It's all faked. You know, the Hollywood effects, mate. He could have afforded that.
You think?
Yeah, yeah. Diana, there's another one.
Well, sorry, just go back and explain to me why Tupac, at the peak of his success and career, would have faked his own death.
Had enough of fame. Just had enough of it. Just, I can't, all that sort of, that spotlight on you the whole time would get too much. So, yeah, fake it.
And you said Diana as well?
Diana, there's another one. There are some people, Mr. Conspiracy, perhaps I should have got on for this. He would say, oh, they're all living on an island somewhere. I think he says that to wind me up. I think that's one where he genuinely knows that would just piss me off. But he'll throw Diana in there. Again, right. Perfectly reasonable to suspect she may have done that.
It's not really perfectly reasonable to expect that, no. again, evidence.
What I'm saying is that just at that time, she was potentially, in a relationship. There was just non-stop spotlight on you and you want to start a new life. You just fake again. She'd have the resources to do it.
Abandon your children. Yeah.
Well, they might have been on it.
Of course, yes.
They might be. Who knows? Maybe that's why Harry's left the country. Maybe he's a bit nearer to her now.
Maybe.
Whatever island she's on.
Yeah, and it would be very easy for Harry to sneak over to this island and visit because he's not followed by paparazzi ever, is he?
There's also Andy Kaufman, of course.
Now, with Andy Kaufman, and I'm sorry for anyone who doesn't know who Andy Kaufman is, but he's the only one that I would say is the most likely to have faked his death.
Yeah, because he...
Just because it's the sort of thing he would do.
Yeah, he used to do all these sort of stunts and things. But, because there was... going back a few years, there was supposedly this letter, wasn't there?
Yes.
And he was going to... Was he supposedly going to appear somewhere? But it turned out to be not true at all.
No. Why is it people come up with these theories? Is it just because... And not just... death fakers, but people, who believe all sorts of terrorist atrocities are big conspiracy jobs and things like that. Is it just because the reality of it not being a conspiracy is too hard for them to contemplate?
I think so. I think when we had Mr. Conspiracy on, that was a long way back now, and we talked about all those conspiracies that he thought of. I think it's it's almost like 9/11, for example, was such a huge atrocity.
Yeah.
So you can't really get your head around that. So in some ways it's easier to take it as a... You can explain it more as a conspiracy theory.
But people have tried to deliver these conspiracy theories, and anyone who knows what they're talking about can debunk everything they say very, very quickly.
Yes, I know,
but
I know.
It doesn't seem to matter.
The thing about them is, when you first watch them, so I used to be quite a conspiracy theorist. So, you know, I used to work very closely with Mr. Conspiracy when I was fairly young, so I was quite impressionable. So I would go along with a lot of this stuff, right? So I remember after 9/11, he was absolutely convinced the whole thing was a conspiracy.
Right.
And I remember watching some videos on it, and I must admit, watching these videos, the evidence seemed incredibly compelling. So I watched this one film. I can't remember what it's called. It's quite a famous film about 9/11.
Is it called Loose Change?
Loose Change. That's the one.
I think I've seen it.
So I watched that. And let's be honest, if you're looking to be swayed, that will do it.
Yes, but you have to seek it out, don't you?
Yeah, you have to
and
seek
I'd
it out.
And I'd argue if you're seeking that sort of thing out, then you probably want to be convinced it is a conspiracy.
So I went along with it for a while, and then, I don't know, whether I just grew up a little bit, whether I just started listening to other people a bit more, and I started watching other stuff, and I swayed completely in the other direction. So I watched
what,
all
this
stuff.
This is the same direction.
Well, yes, some people would argue. But I watched all these other videos on 9/11. And, God, they made me angry because they were full of so much bullshit. And there was one I watched. I think probably one of the ones that actually was the turning point for me was when they were claiming that all the news channels were in on it. And had to individually, not just like have one feed of the pictures, but individually had to superimpose the aeroplanes onto their footage. And so there's this one bit of footage where the plane looks like it sort of disappears for a second, or it's not there, and or something like that. And that they claim this particular news channel forgot.
Yeah, because you would.
To superimpose the plane on. I mean, that's not going to happen. If this is the massive conspiracy theory, you're not going to forget that. You know, that's going to be probably number two on the checklist. Number one, go to Twin Towers when bombs detonated. Number two, superimpose planes. And if that's being forgotten, I mean, it's like all of these things. It's like the whole man walking on the moon thing. There's so much nonsense that people talk about.
So going back to the faking their own death conspiracy theories, if you were to do that, would you, or if you were reaching a level of success and fame where you couldn't walk outside your front door without being mobbed by fans, and someone offered you, someone sort of FBI agent sidled up to you and said, "Trev, we can send you to the island if you want."
Yeah.
Do you think you'd ever go?
Because
I know you like a quiet life. You don't like being bombarded. But
I mean, it depends. Like if I was at that level of fame and I wasn't enjoying it, and you the thing is, you've then got to weigh that up with, as you say about Diana, for example. Do you weigh up the peace and tranquility that you are going to experience for the rest of your natural life against the hurt, anguish, trauma that you're going to put your friends and loved ones through as a result of your actions? Because presumably, you know, I was being a little bit flippant about Prince Harry earlier, but they're going to have to be victims of your deceit as well.
Yeah, that would have to be the rule. You can't tell anybody, but we can get you on the island.
So I don't know. I couldn't do that to my family.
Well, that's a very respectable answer.
Yeah. What about you?
No, I think I am arrogant and egotistical enough to quite enjoy if I was mobbed by loving fans.
Would you?
Day.
You'd like quite enjoy that, would you?
They'd probably get bored. I'd probably be outside my front door the entire time.
They'd be going to the island.
Yeah, they'd leave me.
They'd be like, "For fuck this, Ben, just fuck off." So just going back to Elvis for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Because, obviously, I was reading up about the 43rd anniversary of his death. I came across this article that said what his last words were.
Oh. Can I just raise a slight concern with this?
Go on.
I mean, legend has it that Elvis Presley died on the toilet.
Well, yes. So who could possibly know? Well, this is his last known words then.
Fair enough.
Maybe his last words were not so much words, but more a noise.
Yeah.
I don't know.
His last words were, oh shit, I'm out of paper.
Yeah. But his last words are supposedly, I'm going to the bathroom to read.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that a thing people do, by the way?
Well, I don't. It is things. Well, I often find this bizarre that people find sitting on the loo a time of peace and relaxation. And I don't know about you, and I don't want to get into this too much, but I like to just get in and get out. I'm like the SAS when it comes to, you know, I don't find sitting on the toilet, it's, I guess if you're in a busy household, it's probably different because I live on my own. I haven't got kids running around. I would imagine if you've got kids running around, you just escape to the loo for a bit.
And unless you're incredibly constipated, sorry to get graphic with this, but who wants to read between 3 and 5 minutes of a book?
Well, no.
And also, I don't like the idea of that book sitting on top of the toilet cistern with all the molecules flying in the air every time you flush, and then you pick it up and read it. It's,
yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's this thing that people do. And obviously Elvis did. I wish I knew what he was going in to read.
Oh, that'd be good.
You know, we don't know what books he had in there, whether it was...
How to Fake Your Own Death.
How to Fake Your Own Death in 5 Easy Moves. Was it? or maybe it was a book of philosophy. We don't know. These are unanswered questions. One of those questions, probably one of the very few questions that we don't know the answer to when it comes to Elvis. What book was he reading?
That's a really... I wonder if anyone does know.
Well, I'm going to put it into Google and see if we can find an answer.
Just while you're Googling that, I would just like to say that for me, the biggest bit of proof that Elvis Presley didn't fake his own death is surely the method of which he went about it. I mean, if you're the king of rock and roll...
Yeah.
And you want to die with your pants down on the toilet, do you?
Well, but if he, I mean, it's not the way. If you fake it, that's not how you want people to think you died, is it?
No. Unless he's it's a double bluff and he's a genius and he thought, well, if I pick this way, no one's going to think I faked it, because why on earth would you pick this way? It's the perfect way to go.
It is a good way of doing it. Maybe that's it. So maybe he thought, well, if I get it out there that I died on the toilet, people are going to think, yeah, why would you want that out?
Yeah.
So therefore, in fact, it's foolproof when you think about it. If he has faked his own death, it's a brilliant idea. I don't know what book he was reading.
You found it.
Elvis Presley died reading A Scientific Search for the Face of Jesus.
Oh.
Isn't that incredible?
I don't really know what to say to that. I mean, does Elvis know something we didn't, or?
I don't know. Apparently he'd specifically requested this book a few weeks before his death, having heard that it proved the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin, said to be Jesus's burial wrapping.
Ooh.
Isn't that weird?
I wonder if he ever got to the end of the book.
I mean, that worries me about dying. I don't want to... Like, when you start a box set, like, I often worry, I hope I don't go before I get to the end of this.
I can't remember who it was, but I think there is... There's more than one of them, actually, famous American celebrities who say that they'll often buy a book and read the last page so that they know how it finishes in case they die midway through it.
Wow, yeah.
Which is a very dark way of living your life.
I couldn't do that, because then it would ruin the rest of the reading experience for me.
But, yeah.
I can understand it. What I hope is that when you die, this is my idea of when you die, is that whatever happens, even if it's nothing, but in your last few moments of consciousness, maybe, or whatever you believe, that at some point, anyway, all answers are given.
But that raises another dilemma, is do you actually want to know the answers to everything you never knew?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So, I mean, that could be the question, which one of my friends didn't like me very much, but only put up with me? You'd have to know that.
Well,
said the worst thing about me?
Well, I mean, maybe you don't have to know those little things. I'm thinking more on a bigger scale. Like, for me, the one thing that really... And this is genuinely true. One thing that really bothers me is I might die before they find life on another planet.
And why should that bother you?
Because I just think to not be alive when that happens, to not know that. So when I die, I want somehow for someone to say, oh, by the way, yes, there is life elsewhere. And you might even get to know a little bit what it looks like, but just, oh, right, okay, great, thank you. And that really bothers me. I'm genuinely telling you that. It really bothers me, that.
Well, here's hoping you do. You've probably got, I don't know, what, 40, 50 years left to cling on to that hope?
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, you know, I was watching a thing the other day about Mars again. They were talking about life on that. And you think, oh, just get on and find it. I need to know. I want to know, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to rush it for you.
No, exactly. But this is what I mean. But as I'm watching this program, that's what I'm thinking. You know, they haven't got that long left in the bigger picture of things with my time on Earth to give me these answers. So I'm hoping that if they haven't got those answers by the time I go, it's all revealed to me anyway.
I think this podcast has become quite depressing.
It's just, okay,
it's become a big reminder that our time is all marked and we're all going to die. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, well, it's been let's face it, it's been a depressing few months, hasn't it? I mean, it's all got to come out somewhere. So anyway, what we were doing last words, weren't we?
Yes.
Just to cheer you up.
Yeah.
Back to death. So, I mean, there's some famous ones, isn't there? Obviously, Oscar Wilde's last words, pretty famous, wasn't it?
Not famous enough that I can remember him.
No, he said, my wallpaper and I are fighting a duel to the death. One or the other of us has to go. I mean, I think that's a terrific last words.
Yeah, it's a strange observation to make as your final declaration, but whatever.
Jack Daniel, the obviously inventor of Jack Daniels.
Yes.
He just said, one last drink, please.
I like that.
I tell you what, though, I got on to look in. When I was thinking about this, I got on to look up the last things people have said before they were executed.
God, Trev!
Well, you know, life's dark, isn't it? And,
it is now at the moment, yes.
So there was a guy called Robert Charles Towery, okay?
Okay.
He, not a nice man. He robbed a man, injected him with battery acid, and then strangled him. So,
yeah, it sounds like a bit of a wrong one, doesn't he?
Yeah, not on us. And his last words were, I love my family. Now, he should have stopped there, right? That should have been full stop.
You know, surely there's not a but coming.
Put the plug in, that's it.
Switch him on.
He went on, I love my family. Potato, potato, potato.
I wasn't expecting that.
Well, no, of course you weren't expecting that.
I said, the really annoying thing is I'm assuming those being his last words, we can never get an explanation as to why he said that.
Never going to know why he said that. No.
Oh.
Grover Cleveland Redding, again, not a very nice man. None of these people are that nice because they're being executed, unless they're being wrongfully executed, but that's not the discussion we're having. Right?
No.
He said, very intriguing last words. He said, I have something to say, but not at this time. Oh, I mean, you can't leave that, can you? You can't leave that.
You've got to think, if you're the man in charge of, you know, I don't know what the thing is, pulling the lever or flicking the switch, you've got to think, oh, go on, mate. Go on, what are you going to say?
Yeah,
please,
go on.
Please don't leave us hanging.
James Jackson, his last words were, I'm ready to roll, time to get this party started.
Wow.
I mean, you can only assume he was pretty bonkers.
Yes.
Carl Pransom, one of the most vicious and remorseless criminals to have ever walked the earth, apparently. His last words were, hurry it up, you hoosier bastard. I could hang a dozen men while you're screwing around. And Eileen Wuornos, who there was a film made about her, Monster, which is a cracking film. She said, "I'd just like to say I'm sailing with The Rock and I'll be back like Independence Day with Jesus June the 6th, like the movie. Big mothership and all. I'll be back." She ain't come back yet.
Not yet. She didn't specify what year, though, did she?
No, she didn't. You're absolutely right. She didn't specify. So just June the 6th every year. Look out for it. Oh, here's a great one. Thomas J. Grosso. He was just really annoyed about his last meal.
Right.
He said, "I didn't get my SpaghettiOs. I got spaghetti. I want the press to know this."
Well, they do now.
Right, last two. And I want you to sort of try and guess, maybe along the lines of what they might have said.
Okay.
So this was George Apple. And he was, again, a pretty nasty murderer. He went to the electric chair. Mm-hmm. Can you think maybe what his last words might have been?
Potato, potato, potato.
No.
You've mentioned specifically that this method was the electric chair. Is that relevant to his last words?
Yes, it is, sort of, yes.
I don't know. Let's imagine
think
he made
of his
some...
name as well.
Apple. Apple Electric. What year was this?
He was executed in the early back in the early 1900s.
Oh, so it wouldn't have been a Steve Jobs, you know, Mac-related Apple Electric joke.
No.
Okay. No, I can't think.
He said, "Well, gentlemen, you're about to see a baked apple." And finally, a guy called James French, again, went to the electric chair.
Got to be something about French toast.
Were you on the right lines?
What was it?
He said, "How about this for a headline for tomorrow's paper? French fries."
So, Trev, I don't know if you've seen this thing in the news this week, but Donald Trump has had a very specific request.
Right.
He has asked, or I don't know, he's probably hasn't asked, he doesn't ask for anything, does he?
He's
demands.
Ordered, directed.
Yeah, he wants shower heads to be changed.
What?
Yes, I know.
There's some quite big things going on in the world right now.
I know. The Trump administration wants to change the rules around shower heads and water pressure in order to keep his hair perfect, it says in this news feed here. And he wants to change the water flow to 2.5 gallons a minute or something like that.
Right.
And also, I think it's because it might have been something ordered previously to reduce water wastage by the Obama administration, which means he wants to fix it.
Right, okay.
In his mind.
So this is vanity and a bit of revenge.
Yes, but also, it's the most powerful man in the world wasting his time with arguably one of the most inconceivably petty things to do.
So what's this for? For his hair?
He wants to have perfect hair. I think that ship may have sailed sometime
ago. Yes. I did see somewhere this week, perhaps it was on the back of this story, it must have been, because there was an article I read about his hair. So presumably this was because there's this story going around about the shower heads. Mm. So there was one man that I read, and it was saying that he was at dinner with Donald Trump once, and he asked him about his hair and how many people think it's a wig of some sort. And apparently he pulled his hair up to prove that it wasn't a wig.
Right.
But this man did say he could confirm by seeing it up close that, get this, because this is a massive shock for you, it's not his natural colouring right now.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, this is like, you know, one of my favourite comic characters, Count Arthur Strong.
Yes.
If people don't know who Count Arthur Strong is, he's this great sort of old entertainer type character. He did loads of radio series. He had three TV series. Very funny. And there's this one episode in, I think there's both the radio and the TV, where he runs for like a local councillor or something. And one of the things he wants to pledge is, I think it's a grant for a new hat for everyone, and it's really because he needs a new hat. And right. this is what the story reminds me of. It's like a politician saying, you know, everyone's going to benefit from the shower heads letting more water out at a higher pressure or whatever it is, when really he's going, my hair is the most important thing. Do you think he's like Samson?
Maybe he is.
Like, his hair is his power.
Yeah, but what it made me think of was actually about yourself, because I thought, I mean, he can pass all these demands and things and get his petty little way, but I also thought, well, you are a person who has lots of little irritations in life and lots of things that bug you, and I thought if you could pick one of them, just one, that you could force through as law, which one would you settle on?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, as you know, the car horn thing is something that drives me insane.
I mean, that seems like a bit of a wasted thing to me.
It does.
Shower heads arguably is a wasted thing. But.
Yeah, yeah. So one thing that I could definitely push through as law.
Yes.
That would basically make my life better.
Yes. But I know you've got quite a few irritations.
Yeah.
Like right now, and I think I'd pick this myself just because it's annoying me at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm trying to record a podcast with you, and I'm hoping that it won't pick up on the recording, but the next door neighbours are out making quite a lot of noise, doing some work. I don't think working on a Sunday should be allowed.
I'm tempted to go for some sort of curfew.
You think?
Yes, so that it would be similar to yours, like no Sunday, but I think after a certain time, I'm not saying you can't go out, but you have to, like, there'll be noise police around, and the streets will be flooded with microphones, and if you make a noise above a certain sort of decibel limit, you'll be thrown in prison.
Okay.
So I think that would be it, because I think I can, even though it drives me insane, noise during daytime in a working week, I can sort of accept.
So what time would your curfew kick in?
I think it would kick in, I'm not going to be unreasonable, but I would say come 9 o'clock.
That seems fine.
Yeah, then. But you see, where I live, it's like the place comes alive after 9 o'clock.
Oh, I see.
I mean, it's noisy all day, but after nine, like, there's an extra level of noise that goes up. So I think it would have to be after about 9 o'clock. If you make it, you know, there's certain things I'll allow. You know, just the normal running of a car, normal chatter in the street, but anything that's just above that, because I think it's, you know, people make so much unnecessary noise.
Now, speaking of, maybe you've just answered my question. It was unnecessary noise. I was going to say, there are things that do need to make a big noise, like ambulances and police cars.
Fine.
Are they exempt?
They're exempt.
Okay, good.
But what I would say is things like slamming your car door. You know, let's find a way where you don't have to keep slamming your car door. I accept you've got to close your car door, but don't make so much noise. Like, it seems to me that people where I live, after about 9 o'clock, open and close car doors for fun. Do you know, it's like their little bit of entertainment. There are some nights I go to bed and it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you hear car door after car door opening and closing. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, my area is fairly quiet. You should come and live around here.
Well, the thing is, I am considering potentially moving. I know.
Oh, no.
So there might be that I go to somewhere that's quieter. Maybe.
And then you go somewhere lovely and quiet, and then you've wasted your presidential decree on this curfew that everyone else will still have to abide by.
But because I'm not such a selfish bastard, it would then benefit everyone else. So, you know, if I do move, whoever moves into my place would benefit from the law that I have passed.
I see.
You see? So I'm not like a Trump. I'm not doing it solely for myself. Talking of noise, there was a really weird noise outside last night, and I couldn't get to the bottom of what it was. It sounded like, I don't know, I think it was like probably a fox, but right. It didn't sound like the normal fox noise. It sounded like some sort of duck or strange bird.
Oh, I wonder if it's your mouse problem.
Well, why would the mouse... This was outside. What would the mouse... I mean, if it's a mouse...
Well, hang on a minute. Didn't you just suggest duck?
Yeah.
Well, if you're saying to me, why would a mouse be there when you've got a mouse problem, and you're coming back at me with it could have been a duck.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is this was obviously down the road a little bit. It wasn't in my house.
Right.
And if it was a mouse, that was... I mean, it was a mouse with a... amplifier and microphone.
Okay. Know?
It was, but it was setting all the dogs off.
I know where you live, and yeah. I've lived in Croydon for years and years.
Yeah.
But I have never once seen a duck wandering down that particular very suburban area.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it was a duck, but it sounded like some sort of bird, and it sounded more like a bird that you would hear around water. But my one thought was it sounded like something was trapped in something. I thought, is it a fox that's trapped in something?
Hang on a minute. In what universe does a duck sound anything remotely similar to a fox?
This is what I'm saying. It was an unrecognisable noise. All things were going through my mind, because it wasn't the normal screaming noise of a fox that makes you think someone's being murdered.
Right.
It wasn't like the barking of the male fox either. And it was like it was a very odd noise. I couldn't place what it was.
So I was thinking, what was it?
I never found out.
Oh, what a disappointing story.
No,
I thought you were going to say you went out and investigated.
No, I was going to go out. I got my slippers on, all ready to go out, and then it stopped. So I never found out. So it's really irritating that I didn't find out what it was.
Oh, that's really bizarre. So do you think it stopped because it got free, or this mystery beast died from whatever was trapping it? Or?
I don't really want to think of it being a terrible ending for this beast, whatever it was. I'm hoping that it found freedom and is now enjoying its life in a field or by a lake somewhere.
I doubt it.
I think back, Ben, to when you were a kid, up to sort of teenage years. Were there any? I know you're not much of a reader now, but were there any books that you loved that really stood out for you, even as a tiny kid to your teenage years?
Not really. I suppose as a smaller lad, I used to like reading R.L. Stine's Goosebumps books.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. A bit after my time, I think. Well, they look like horror stories.
Yeah, little scary horror themed. They weren't too big or challenging, but they were quite fun, so I like those.
All right.
I'm not suggesting it's a very intellectual book, but there it is.
But any books that you read, I mean, a lot of books you have to read at school are pretty dull, but any that stand out?
I never read them.
You never read them?
No.
Because I've just ordered a book that I read at school called Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, which I loved at school, and I haven't read it yet, but it's just arrived, and I'm really looking forward to reading it again. I hope that I'm going to enjoy it as much as I did when I was at school. It was kind of all about racism in the deep south of America, from memory. Because we had to read To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a terrific book.
I was tasked as well to read To Kill a Mockingbird for my English GCSE exams.
Oh, it's a cracking book.
I wouldn't know. I never read the book. What I did was I borrowed the VHS tape. And I thought, I'll just watch the film. That's as good as reading the book. I'll get the gist of the story, which, of course, is not true for an English exam about the book. I got that stuck in the VCR and couldn't get it out. And to this day, I have no idea what happens to Kill a Mockingbird.
I've got it on DVD. I'm going to lend you To Kill a Mockingbird. The next time I see you, I'm going to lend you To Kill a Mockingbird. It's a cracking... I mean, it's emotionally stirring as
a
story.
It looks old.
What do you mean it looks old?
It looks like it's going to be a really old, grainy film. Is it? I bet it's black and white, isn't it?
It is black and white, yeah.
You see, I knew that.
What's wrong with that?
I never even got to watch the tape. I broke it, but I could tell it looked dull.
Well, how did you do the exam?
I just made shit up.
Did you make enough shit up to get any marks?
I think I got a better grade than you'd think for someone who didn't read or see the film.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of my history GCSE when, I'm sure I've told you this story before, when I had to write an essay on the burning of the Reichstag.
And, yes, and you didn't know what it was.
And I didn't know what it was. And it turned out that it was on one bit of... Our history teacher used to give us these bits of paper on the old, sort of old carbon copier things. So it would be his handwritten papers and he'd put it through that carbon copy machine.
Yeah.
And it was something on one of those that I'd either lost or I wasn't there on the day they did it. And I had to make it. I think luckily there was enough other stuff in the exam that I'd done enough research on revision on that I managed to get a C. But that and that, I had to make it up. I didn't know what it was.
I was terrible with any sort of work like that. I was so bad at doing any sort of work. Once, and this is absolutely true, Mrs. Ben, being a little bit older than me, had already done the exam the previous year. So she gave me her old coursework so I could have a look at it.
Yeah.
Because it was on the same subject and she got a good grade for it. I handed it in as my own work.
No, Ben.
And do you want to know how I got caught?
I think you've told me this. I think I know the answer to this.
I was too lazy to even change the name on the coursework.
Ben, it's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. What sort of punishment was given in return for that?
I think they thought it was so incompetently stupid that it actually deserved pity instead of punishment. So I was just told to do the homework.
Wow.
I don't think I ever did.
Well, I was going to say, you just copied Mrs. Ben's work.
Just reworded it probably, yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, anyway, so you know books when you're very young. So like my favourites were things like the Mr. Men books. Love the Mr. Men books.
Right.
Know, things like that. Noddy. Love Noddy, things like that. Anyway, I came across a children's book this week, or what I believed to be a children's book this week.
Okay.
And I think I got about 3 or 4 pages into reading this when I started to wonder whether this was for children. I want to read it to you.
Okay, go for it.
The book's called... I mean, even the title got me... Yeah, it did get me wondering. But I thought... Let's read this with an innocent mind.
Okay.
Brenda's beaver needs a barber.
Okay, I mean, okay. Trev, come on.
Right, here we go. Brenda has a beaver and she's ready to confess. As soft and sweet as it may be, her beaver is a mess. Brenda's beaver's big. Brenda's beaver's hairy. Every guy who sees it says that Brenda's beaver's scary.
How did you... For even a sentence, think this was a children's book.
Well, it's got like illustrations of a big hairy beaver, like a proper beaver, right? Brenda took her beaver for a swim down at the lake. By the looks that she received, she figured that was a mistake. She stuffed that furry mound into a swimming suit. It stuck out all around. It was anything but cute. Some who saw it laughed. Others were just stunned. Brenda's beaver was hanging out, soaking up the sun. There's a picture of a beaver in a sort of G-string.
I wonder if this is like a specific new style of book. It's because children will be innocent enough not to think anything's amiss with this, but the adults can have a good laugh themselves when reading it.
Well, this is exactly what it turns out to be.
Right? Ah!
I will tell you a little bit more when I looked into it. I'll read you the rest of the book and then I'll tell you what I discovered. Okay. So her friends could not believe her. They said, "We need to talk." They covered up her beaver and they took her for a walk. "Brenda, dear, listen here. We want to help you out. Your beaver needs a makeover. It really needs it now." "I hope I don't seem pushy," said her biker friend named Kim. "Your beaver is too bushy. We just think it needs a trim."
I mean, so tortuous, crowbarring in the fact her name's Kim, so they can rhyme it with trim.
Savannah pulled her beaver back to show off what she'd done. Hers has a nice landing patch. It looked like it'd be fun. Chris's beaver is quite rare. It could be worth $1 million. Hers is bare. It has no hair. Her beaver is Brazilian. Kim produced some scissors and Chrissy had some wax. Now all Brenda had to do was sit back and relax. As they came towards her beaver, they said, "Now don't be scared. We're going to see what's underneath that frumpy pile of hair." It ended in just minutes. They didn't leave her much. When Brenda's friends were finished, she and her beaver blushed. Her beaver was so tiny, they couldn't believe their eyes. It was smooth and it was shiny. It was hard to recognise. Now Brenda is so proud, it seems like every time we see her, she's in the centre of a crowd, just showing off her beaver. Right, so...
I was going to say I'm glad it had a happy ending, but I think that might be the wrong thing to say.
Well, the thing was, I looked into this, right, and it is exactly as you mentioned, right? It's this clutch of books, if clutch is a decent word to use right now, called Reach Around Books. And they are...
Reach Around?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And there's five books in this collection. They are so that children can read, have them read to them innocently whilst the parents have fun. So there's one called Put Tony's Nuts in Your Mouth.
Oh, for God's sake.
There's one called Spank the Monkey Lends a Hand. Come Swing with Us.
Okay.
And Susie Likes to Look at Balls. Now, the thing that worried me was if you read these to your children, like, you know, I don't know if you know what it's like, but when my godchildren were little, if there's a book they love, you end up reading it to them over and over and over and over again. So the chances are they could be in some other company and they'd start quoting bits of this book. So I don't know how you'd get around that.
Well, I suppose... if the child's saying it, you get round it by them thinking, well, the child is saying something innocent, and if it's your dirty mind that's worried about it, that's your fault.
Yeah, I suppose. I'll tell you what, though, all of my friends who have younger children, this is what they're getting for Christmas. Well, there we are. That's just about it for another Trev and Ben podcast. I have one recommendation for you this week.
Okay, go for it.
It's on Netflix. It's called The Umbrella Academy.
Is that something to do with Resident Evil?
I don't think so.
Okay.
What's Resident Evil about? I don't know what that is.
It's a video game. The Umbrella Corporation or something rings a bell. I might be talking absolute rubbish.
No, I don't know. I mean, it's based on a graphic novel, I think, this.
Oh, probably not then.
it's sort of seven adopted siblings who all grew up under the leadership of this very eccentric billionaire, and they've all got superpowers, including time travel and all kinds of things. I must admit, I started watching it thinking, again, it's one of those things, I don't know if this is going to be for me, but I steamed through the first series in 2 days.
Wow.
It was just, it's so good. It's a bit out there. You have to suspend disbelief. There's a talking monkey, which is a bonus.
Is it Spank?
but it's well worth a watch, so I recommend that.
Nice
and,
one.
The other thing I'd recommend is it's quite a moving podcast. I'm a big fan of the Adam Buxton podcast.
Yes.
And I've just been catching up on his latest ones. And I came across his latest one with Joe Cornish, which I think is the last one in the latest series. And basically, he talks about his mum passing away very recently. But it's a very comforting listen. It's not too sad. I love Adam Buxton anyway, but him and Joe Cornish just sort of talking like two mates in the aftermath of something like that. It's just an incredible listen. It's one of those very rare things. Normally, if I'm listening to a podcast, a bit like if you're listening to this right now, you're probably doing something. It's sort of just on in the background and you pick up little bits, right?
Yeah.
It made me stop. It made me sit down and it made me just listen and do nothing else.
I can second this because I have actually already heard this podcast.
Have you?
And I can confirm it is excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just an incredible listen, so I'd heartily recommend that. It's just moving, funny. It's just incredible is the only word I can think of to describe it. Probably one of the best things I've ever heard. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's very emotional, but not... It's not like a depressing listen, if that makes sense.
No.
It's quite uplifting in a way.
Yeah, it is uplifting, exactly. So there we go. And that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, and take it easy.
Bye.